Welcome back to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. This is Evan McElwain, Bowery Capital's Director of Growth, and today I'm joined by Jason Bay, co-founder and CRO of Blissful Prospecting. Great to have you on the show, Jason.
Evan, what's up, man? I am looking forward to it.
So, Jason, before we dive into today's topic of Outbound 3.0, how to prospect in 2020, tell us a little bit about your background and give us a brief history of what you've been up to.
Yeah, so actually, my first sales job, so I'm about to turn 31 next month, was when I was 18 in college, and I went door-to-door selling house painting services. And I ended up working with that company for about 6 or 7 years. But the interesting part was, even though I was doing business-to-consumer, there was a lot of really interesting business-to-business lessons, too, because when I would go to houses, I noticed that if I tried to sell the painting services at the door, they weren't really that interested. But when I focused on selling an appointment, you know, free estimate to like look at what it would cost at a later time, people were really interested in that, you know, and I think there's a really good lesson there that really applies with doing outbound too, where you stop trying to sell your stuff to people in the cold email, in the cold call, right? You're just looking for an appointment. You just want to schedule a time later to meet with that person. But yeah, I learned that lesson really early on in my sales career. And then when I got into outbound, this is more around 2013, when I left that company as their director of marketing to go consult and work with other companies. That's where I learned how to do outbound for myself to find clients. And then I also started working with B2B companies that were like, hey, that was a cool email. Like, can you do that for us? That's right, how we ended up starting Blissful Prospecting, was we were doing outsourced sales development, essentially, and doing appointment setting. And now we're doing more, you know, training and coaching and consulting and helping companies that want to help themselves with outbound.
Interesting. So from the get-go, you learned early in your career that it's not about kind of selling the end of the product. It's really about selling that next step, like what, you know, selling that next step in the sales process, trying to get people through the funnel.
Yeah, baby steps, right? Because a lot of the people, and house painting, again, is so funny because it's so similar, but yeah, I go to people's houses and they have peeling paint on their, you know, fascia boards or their trim boards, and they didn't know it. So they had a need that they were not aware of. And that's actually really common when you're doing B2B prospecting too, is that prospects, they might have a need for what you're doing, but they might not know it. So if you try to sell them on something and you try to, you know, lead with the pain approach and say, hey, you might be having challenges with this or have pain points here, and here's how we can help you, you're moving so far beyond where their head is at, because in their minds, hey, no matter what you're doing, they already have a solution to play for, even if they're doing it themselves. And all you're trying to get them to do is be open to change. And you do that through leading with curiosity, is what I always say. If you're curious when you're prospecting, you're naturally going to be inquisitive and ask questions and learn about the prospect versus being assumptive about their challenges or how you can help them.
One thing we always do before we really get kind of deep into our topic is like to ask our guests, what's one thing that none of our listeners would know about you?
I'm extremely OCD, and it's something that I'm working on. I was like OCD to the point of, like, when I turned the volume on in stereo, it had to be an increment of 5, you know, like 35, like 40, like that kind of thing. And I realized as an entrepreneur, especially, it really doesn't serve me to be so OCD with our project management tool or how we're tracking conversion rates on an email campaign or whatever. So I've really had to really let go of that. But that's probably something you wouldn't know about me unless you lived with me.
So, cool. one thing that just based on your intro that I'm curious to know more about is you mentioned you kind of started out Blissful Prospecting, and one of the things that you were focused on was like outsourced outbound. How do you think about that? You know, if you're an early stage founder, how do you think about that in the early days in terms of whether you should be outsourcing or whether you should be hiring a full-time SDR dedicated to your org?
Really, really good question. And this is something that I think a lot of startups are careless with, actually. So there's a couple things you want to have in place before you outsource. Otherwise, what you're going to be doing is you're going to be paying money for someone else to like be doing market research for you, essentially. So product market fit is huge. And we should talk about what product market fit actually means, too. Because from an outbound standpoint, product market fit is like, hey, you have the products, there's a demand for the market, et cetera, but it's also your business model and is what you're doing sustainable. So in other words, like what I'm looking for is, have you sold your product consistently? Do you know the price? Do you know the market? Do you have people that can sell it right now and have figured out that process and what the language is? Then you can go and outsource that, and it's going to be a really effective use of your time. But what I don't feel comfortable recommending to startups is for someone else to figure out the language that your customers use to talk about their pain points and how your product helps them, because you don't want that at the mercy of a company that you're outsourcing to. You need to have that stuff internally.
Got it. So as you're starting out, you're really trying to crystallize what the exact pain point is that you're addressing, and kind of what that product market fit looks like. That really needs to be in-house. That needs to be a founder. That needs to be their, you know, Renaissance sales rep having those conversations, because if you get the language around the pain points wrong, then your messaging is going to be wrong throughout the sales process.
And think about the messaging component. Think about that across the organization too. I know we talked about this in our previous call where, and maybe some of the people listening are not quite far enough along where they have, you know, deep silos and sales and marketing and product, but if you don't have your messaging down and understand these pain points in your customer's language, your marketing is going to suffer too. Your website's not going to be right. Your pay-per-click is not going to be right. The content that you create is not going to be right. So you really need to figure that out in-house first, build some really good social proof and case studies, and have clear segmentation with your ICPs and personas, and then you basically need to hand over that to an outsource sales development. There's tons of great companies out there that can do this for you. Like, give them a head start. Don't make them do the dirty work of figuring this stuff out. You're going to waste a lot of money in the process. There's a couple of reasons why someone might want to outsource that does make a lot of sense. So if you want to scale quicker, that's a definite one, because if you've never done outbound before, you're not going to have to go through that learning curve yourself. So there's definitely learning curves to doing this stuff. It's what we help a lot of companies with, you know, going outbound for the first time. So you're going to bypass that learning curve. And I would probably say that's probably the biggest thing is speed to revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, makes sense. And so companies that do outsource their outbound will likely keep their closers in-house, or what do you typically see these days?
Yeah, so you really want to keep your AEs in-house if you're doing the AE SDR, you know, sort of model. Keep your closers in-house and have SDR set appointments for you.
Got it. All right, so we talked about kind of, you know, the decision of outsource, grow your team in-house, and how that decision evolves over time depending on where you're at as a business. I guess keep going down this path of really building out the outbound process, right? So if you are going about outbound for the first time, you don't have that, you know, product market fit yet, where is the best place to start?
Yeah, so this is a good transition into this outbound 3.0 concept. And where this came from is, if we look at the history of outbound in its current form, it really started in like the 90s and the early 2000s. And, you know, version 1.0 was, you know, we're going to essentially, if we mass blast and find a tool to do that, it's going to work really effectively because people aren't used to getting cold emails and they're not used to getting a ton of B2B cold calls. Mm-hmm. That worked really, really well for a certain amount of time. And then outbound 2.0 was like late 2000s to really up until 3-4 years ago. And that was like sales engagement platforms like Outreach start coming out, Salesloft, Tout App was like one of the first ones. And that essentially allowed people to do this at scale, and they could pretend that they were personalizing stuff, right? You'd see like first name merge tags, and people would put in stuff like, hey, saw you're a Dodgers fan. And that like worked really well. Multi-channel would start to become a thing where, hey, you couldn't really just cold email. You needed to also call and do this kind of stuff. And that worked really well until about a couple of years ago. The shift that people need to make now to really excel with Outbound 3.0 is a couple of different things. And really, Outbound 3.0 is like, how do you cut through the clutter? So there's three, if you imagine a triangle here, I call it the Outbound trifecta. There's three components to doing this effectively. There's one, your ability to identify good fit accounts and contacts. Second is your ability to engage them with simple conversation starters. And the third is your ability to convert them into opportunities and move them through the sales funnel. So with Outbound 3.0, where you need to make the shift in that identify portion is you need to move from mass blast to more of a quality approach. So you need more clear segmentation. That's where those ICPs, those personas come in. Really having an understanding and empathy over your customers' pains and how they talk about how your product helps them. And then having really good, clean sources of data, which I know you want to get as tech stacks to, which we can talk about. So that shift from mass blast to quality. And then in that engage component of starting new conversations, it's really moving from product-centric messaging to buyer-centric messaging. So instead of talking about how good your features are and like how awesome your company is, how can you take this empathy to your customers and really lead with how you can help them and how you can make them the hero? And the way that you accomplish that is through content, so thought leadership, social proof, using multi-channel, multi-touch outreach cadences, and then using conversational messaging. And that's where we can dig into, like, wait, what should the cold email say? What should you say at the top track? Like, that sort of thing.
Right.
This last pillar, this convert pillar, that's where you need to really transition from taking from the prospect. So I want 30 minutes of your time so I can qualify you, to teaching. So a lot of what's needed right now to set an appointment, because people are still inundated with emails asking them for 15 minutes of their time to do a demo, you really need to teach the prospect something.
Yeah.
So come in with value, have some sort of industry knowledge, have some sort of, hey, I see other companies like you are doing this, like having something that you can teach them. And those are the transitions, the shifts that companies need to make to really execute Outbound 3.0 effectively.
So a couple things I want to dive into right away here. So Outbound 3.0, quality over quantity. People have just been inundated by mass blast because of all these sales enablement tools at their fingertips where they can put 1,000 folks on a 12-step email cadence or sequence. And it's just gotten so easy, right, for sales development reps in an effort to hit their meeting quota or their SQL target to just do the spray and pray approach. So when we think about now the pendulum swinging towards customization, being much more thoughtful about the ICP and buyer persona, how do you balance those two things, right? So how do you balance needing to get enough pipeline and needing to have enough volume so that you're getting a response rate that's going to keep your AEs busy, with being thoughtful and customized and having this be a feel like kind of a personalized curated experience that's also scalable? How do you think about balancing those two things?
Yeah, it's a really great question, and that's a big debate right now. Personalization at scale, is that possible?
Right.
So there's a couple things you want to look at. Your deal size, it has a lot to do with this. So if you have a deal size under $6,000, let's say your ACV is under $6,000, I don't think it makes a lot of sense to do a ton of personalization, right? Mm-hmm. You might find something on their website or on their LinkedIn page that you can find in a minute, 2 minutes, right in the email, fire it off, and that's it. That's all the research that you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in more of that like 6 to 15K range, it starts to make sense to do maybe like a 3x3 kind of system where I'm going to go out and find three pieces of things that I can personalize. I'm going to lead in that with the email. I'm going to customize the entire sequence. I'm going to share this stuff when I make a cold call, that sort of thing. And then anything above $15,000 ACV makes a lot of sense to spend some time doing some personalization because there's just less account opportunities. So right. You got to look at ACV. So the higher your ACV, the more it makes sense. And you got to look at the ROI and look at the cost of how long it takes for your team to do this kind of personalization. That's where you can also look at outsourcing too.
Yeah, so getting even more tactical here. So when we talk about, let's focus on the 15K and up from an ACV standpoint. When you're putting people on a, 6, 7, 8, 10 part cadence, are you going in and customizing every single step? Are you, customizing every other step, matching them with some bump up emails? Because not only do you have to customize across a wide array of prospects, you You're also having to customize within each prospect every single step of the way, because they're not going to be opening and engaging with every email or every LinkedIn message and every, you know, voicemail touch point. How do you think about that?
Yeah, so there's a couple components to this. You know, so how many touches over what period of time? How much should this be customized? And we're also looking at another piece, segmentation. So the way that we suggest going about this is to be very segmented in your approach. Try to have your reps specialize in two or three personas or two or three ICPs so they can get really good at doing things that are somewhat repetitive. So for example, if you know one of your personas is VPs of sales at SaaS companies with 200 to 500 employees, you have one of the reps specialize in doing that because the personalization is going to be very similar for all of them. They're going to be looking for very specific things in their sales experience on LinkedIn, content that they might be posting, versus we're reaching out to companies in manufacturing where no one has a LinkedIn profile or doesn't post anything, and you might be looking for news articles or stuff on their website, right? So segmentation is really, really important so you can create some repeatability in there. And then in terms of the cadence, this is something you just got to play around with. You're not going to 100% customize every touch point. You're going to have 80% of the content there already, and then you're going to add the finishing touches to that. So that first email, for example, you might personalize the first couple sentences and maybe a sentence or two in the middle to provide the context to your value prop or the pain point that you can help them with. And then the second email is going to be completely automated. It's just going to say, any thoughts, question mark, or get a chance to check out the case study. When you call them, you have a call task scheduled in your Sales Engagement platform, you're going to use the same messaging in your call from that first email. So the way you approach the cadence is you want to have 12 to 15 touches, let's say over 30 to 45 days, but you're going to spread out the messaging and those touches. You're going to spread those out across two or three different value props. So usually you have two or three really compelling reasons why your customers choose to use your product. And you're not going to talk about all of those in the first email because then you'll run out of things to talk about. So let's say that I use this example in another interview today, actually. So a customer we're working with, they have like automated like QuickBooks, like accounting, like type of solutions for small and mid-sized companies. One of their big value props is around saving that business owner time. Another one is around like giving them more insights into how they're spending money so that they can spend it wiser, so that they can be confident when they cut payrollers money in there, et cetera, right? Those are two different value props and two different reasons why people use their product. So the first three touches, those first couple of emails, you know, first LinkedIn message, that first cold call, the messaging is going to be focused on that first value prop of like saving them time. And then I'm going to move to the next one so I don't run out of things to say. So
yeah.
You're going to
come that way you can keep adding value, keep adding insights every step of the way. What is at the core here is the sales tech stack. So what do you recommend in the, you know, these days? You've mentioned outreach and sales loss, but what do you recommend these days to early-stage companies that are just putting together their outbound motion for the first time? They're not ready to outsource anything yet, so they do need something in-house to help them get things going.
So one thing I would caution is not getting a tool too early. So the biggest mistake, actually, I see companies make is before they figure out messaging, and before they've made any calls or anything like that, they invest a ton of money in sales engagement platforms, and they end up pushing really crappy messaging through an automated system, and it just doesn't work that well. So I cannot stress enough, like, you need to have the stuff in place that we're talking about right now. You need to have a foundation of that at least before you invest in a sales engagement platform, because this stuff can cost tens of thousands of dollars, and the cost can creep up really fast. So build the process first, the tools come second. So in terms of tech stack, I suggest keeping it really, really lean. So if you're using Salesforce or HubSpot, that's going to integrate with most of the sales engagement platforms, and you have two routes that you could take. You can take a sales engagement platform that has the ability to take care of that identify portion for you and the engagement portion, so you can find accounts and contacts and engage with them. So software like Apollo.io, that's my favorite one right now. I can build lists, find accounts, contact information. I can queue them up in sequences all in one tool. It's super awesome and very affordable. And then you can go the other route, and this is going to require that you have Salesforce. Mm-hmm. The other route is you use a software like outreach. So outreach is not going to have any of the list building component, though. So you're going to be able to do all your engagement through there, but you're going to need to have separate tools. So you're going to want to use LinkedIn Sales Navigator and then LeadIQ. Those are the other two tools that you have to use together to build lists. So what sucks about that is now you have three tools, right, that you have to use to do your sales development versus one. So, which is why I typically recommend Apollo, especially for a startup.
Yep, that makes total sense. Definitely when I stretch that budget, keep it scrappy.
Yeah, keep it scrappy, and I don't know if you guys see this or not, or see companies just wasting money on technology, but it gets out of hand real quick. This stuff is not cheap.
So we've talked about some of the things that sales teams should absolutely do as they're getting an outbound motion started. Let's talk about the flip side of that. What are some of the biggest mistakes you see as sales teams go outbound? So one, it sounds like investing in engagement tools too early and too aggressively is one of them. What are some others that you see?
Yeah, so there's four really big roadblocks. And if you imagine an upside down triangle, at the very bottom would be tools, because I feel like this is the least impactful in terms of like the impact it can have on the results. At the very top is development, so lack of consistent coaching and training. So for some reason, people think that sales training is really important for like the sales process, but not for prospecting. I don't know why. So lack of like weekly call coaching. And call coaching is not just sitting next to your reps while they make calls. It's listening to what the prospect says on their end of it too. So call coaching, having reps coach themselves, having them coach each other, and then having regular training as a group. It only takes 15, 20 minutes a week. You can do it real quick. But sharing best practices, helping the group coach themselves, and not just doing product training. That's a really big thing, development. The next one is collaboration. So I see a lack of collaboration. Even if you have 10 employees, 15, 20, you still have marketing and salespeople and people in customer success. And the biggest mistake you can make is not working together on messaging. Everyone needs to get in the same room to come up with what that email copy should be, what those talk tracks should say, because marketing is not having those one-to-one conversations that sales is. And sales can really give a lot of insights to marketing around the specific language people are using and like what their pain points are and like what the situations come up that those prospects are like, when I do this thing, it sucks, and that's why I was looking into you guys. That's really valuable for marketing. And marketing is getting a lot of really good insights into headlines that work and pay-per-click copy and content, stuff that'd be really good to repurpose for email content or subject lines for sales. And customer success is hearing about what customers love most about your product. That should be shared with sales and marketing. So having a recurring once-a-month meeting or bi-weekly where everyone gets in the same room for 30 minutes and shares, that's a really big thing too. And then the only other one we haven't talked about is outsourcing. So lack of outsourcing and reps doing their own list building, reps doing a lot of their own research and things like that. I mean, there's companies like TaskDrive you can outsource list building to on the cheap. You can hire a virtual overseas team. And we have three of those people on our team. And for $3 to $6 an hour, which is good money for them in the Philippines, like you can have a really solid staff if you invest time in them to do the list building and more of the redundant tasks so that your sales teams can focus on prospecting and focus on
For the listeners that may not know, so when you talk about outsourcing list building, you mean giving somebody a target list of companies, target list of titles, and then having them actually go out and get and dig up that contact info for you so you can plug it into, say, an outreach?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, dude, you've been doing this, right? I mean, how labor intensive it is to get on LinkedIn and have to search for all these people individually?
Yeah. A lot of SDR teams block out pretty much their entire Monday for prospecting, which is, in other words, list building and getting those cadences and sequences ready to go.
Think of the waste. Paying someone $50,000-$60,000 a year plus all the taxes and benefits or whatever. Like, think of the waste when they spend 20% of their time doing something that someone getting paid $6 an hour could probably be better.
Yeah, no, totally. It's a really good point. What are some of the biggest misconceptions about outbound selling?
that doesn't work anymore or that people don't pick up their phone. I have, like, the way that I cold call is I'll cold call people that interact with my LinkedIn content or visit my LinkedIn page. And I use Apollo. I get their direct dial. I call them. And 95% of the time, they pick up the phone. So I don't know why people are saying that people don't pick up the phone. Like, they definitely do. I think that the other big misconception around outbound selling is there's this, like, push to, like, be assumptive and make it about us and, like, what we want from the prospect, because people have been able to kind of bully customers just a little bit when they come through inbound, and they're used to, like, immediately being able to qualify for a person in a call and get to the stuff that they want. And with outbound, it just doesn't quite work like that. That first introductory and discovery process is different. It's different because you still have to do some selling. You reach out to the person in the buyer's journey. They might not even be on the awareness stage yet of the buyer's journey. You know, so there's a little more education involved. And I would say that's the biggest misconception, is there's this pre-awareness stage that happens a lot of times when you're prospecting, and you need to come in and educate people. A technique that works really well is, instead of always doing top-down prospecting and starting at C-level or VP, you can do bottom-up approach too. And essentially what you're doing is gathering insider info. So if you start like a level or two below who you're trying to get in contact with, you can get a lot of information from those people and bring it up to that VP, and it will actually really help in getting that conversation secured. So I did this the other day, actually, with a company, a SaaS company that sells cloud software. And I called their sales manager because they responded to a LinkedIn post and liked my stuff or whatever. And I did two things. So I asked this person, when I called them, my goal is not to do an appointment with that person, the sales manager. I wanted to figure out who she thought would be best to talk to about with what we do. And I also wanted to get some insights into how they're handling outbound and what their challenges are. So what she shared with me was that they're trying this personalization thing at scale. They're trying to find a balance right now between volume and quantity, or volume and quality, excuse me. So when I approached the VP, I sent him a cold email saying, hey, so-and-so said it was cool if I reach out to you and said you were in charge of this. She found me through our LinkedIn post here, so I'm securing some credibility there. She also shared that personalization at scale is something you guys are trying to find a balance with right now, especially with volume and quality and keeping your sales team productive. Sounds like you guys are doing a lot of outbound. We've helped a couple other companies like you, and I'd love to share some strategies that are working really well for them to set more appointments while keeping their team productive. Interested in chatting further. And then got a response back. I can connect Wednesday morning if you're available.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I love that approach. It's just like you can do a lot of the laying the groundwork, doing, you know, information gathering, which helps for even your own qualification process. From folks that aren't necessarily the economic buyer, right? Like you don't need them. It actually makes your time with them even more valuable and time well spent, because you're not sitting there running them through a checklist of, oh, do you use this tool? Do you have Salesforce?
Yeah.
Do you have this? Do you have that? I like that tip a lot. Are there any other kind of tactical tips that you want to share with our listeners?
So I always work backwards to conversion rate. So the most important metric you want to measure is the number of meetings that you're setting up per prospect that you're emailing. So you really want to, at the very low end, be setting up 3-6% of the accounts you're reaching out to. You want to be setting up an appointment with them. So if you're not in that range, I work backwards from reply rates, which you want to be 5-10% plus, again, at a minimum. It's ideally double digits. And then open rates you want to be between 50-60% plus. So if we look at the top there with open rates, there's a couple of really quick things that you can do. So I got this one from Josh Braun, actually. Check out his stuff if you guys are listening to this. You can do this, like, I think he calls it the power of three. You can put three things into the subject, sort of related or completely unrelated things together, and that creates a lot of intrigue. So it could be like initiative, comma, year, comma, name of their company, or their job title, or just their name, right? So you can put three different things in there that are related to the message in your email. The other hack is to use the person's first name. in the subject line. Usually we see 20-30% increase in open rates off the top there. So that's open.
So it would be like Jason dash, you know, one or two words. You know, keep it quick. Got it.
Yep. Yeah. So that's a really good one. The other one for reply rates and, you know, conversion rate into media, because those two sort of go hand in hand, is a couple of things. So a lot of where I see people making mistakes is those first two sentences are personalized in the email, but they don't connect with the rest of the email. So you can't just say, hey, I saw you're a fan of the Dodgers. Oh, by the way, we have companies with
buy
your account. It's super weird to do that. So
right.
You got to be connected.
Weird, yeah, and it doesn't come off as genuine and just a bit lazy.
Yeah, it's got to be connected. The other thing, too, is if you could find a way to tie back and relate what your product does with an initiative that company has that you could find, like, on their values page. They could have a corporate sustainability initiative, perhaps, depending on the software that you're selling. There could be some news that's going on. They could be growing. Like, if you could find it a way to tie it back to something that's going on, some sort of trigger in their company, that works really well. The other thing, too, is instead of, you know, okay, so my call to action email I sent you guys was, hey, is it cool if I send a few topics over? I didn't say, hey, can we record a podcast next Thursday or Friday at one of these times?
Which goes back to your first point of, you know, sell the next step, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Just the next step and make it easy to respond to. Hey, is this something worth chatting about? Is this a challenge that you're having right now? Is this something that's on your radar? Like, it doesn't have to be a call to action to hop on a meeting.
And so do you feel like in your experience, you see SDRs asking for the meeting too quickly? It's just like right off the bat, that's the ask, instead of something that's a little bit easier to give up than, say, 30 minutes of somebody's time.
Yeah, they're doing it way too soon. And they're offering meeting links and all kinds of stuff. It's so assumptive. That's a big mistake you can make in a cold call, too, asking for a meeting at the very top. Yeah, you can get a prospect to respond. That's one way of thinking of it. And you can objection handle and stuff. But, like, why not ask a couple of really smart questions? Get them talking and then see if there's some sort of pain point or some sort of opportunity that the prospect didn't know about, and then use that as a reason to hop on a call.
Are there any final thoughts or tips to share with our listeners that you want to mention?
Yes, there's one thing that we put together that we didn't really get a chance to talk about. We have a framework called the reply method. So it's an acronym that you can use to come up with, like, what that cold email should say or what you should say in your talk track, and actually put together a one-page cheat sheet for you guys that you can find at blissfulprospecting.com/Evan. If you check that out, that'll have, like, the five-step process to writing these emails in a little bit more of, like, a not a formulaic way, but more of a framework that you can follow. Yeah, the biggest thing that I recommend and the thing that I want to leave people with is – let curiosity drive the prospecting conversation instead of being assumptive. Don't go in assuming that you know anything about the prospect outside of what you saw online. You don't know what their challenges are. You don't really know what's going on internally. Go in with curiosity and let that drive the conversation.
I like that. That's great. Well, we'll make sure we include a link to that in this post as well, so that it's easy for folks to find.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, Vision, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It was really great having you on the show.
Yeah, you as well, man. And the horseman fences right. Where the flatland meets the flatlands. And the caravan.